Welcome to the Presentation Podcast, episode 13. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more, all for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, based in Southern California near San Diego.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in Montclair, New Jersey, just outside of New York City.
Well, it's great to have us all together again for another time talking about presentation design. How's everyone doing this week? Anything exciting in the works?
Next week, I'm headed to 100-plus degree Phoenix to catch a Diamondbacks game. Not business-related, but it will be baseball stadium number 25 on my list.
And Woo-hoo!
Or actually, no, 26. So then I'll have four left that hopefully I can catch next year. And that will complete my cycle.
And then after that, do you add like the Japan stadiums and stuff like that?
They only have 5 or 10 of them there, so that would be easier.
Yeah,
well,
easy.
Assuming,
and they're all close.
Yes, but I'd have to get to Japan first. That would be the problem.
Very cool. Well, mine isn't as fun. I mean, it is fun, but I'm working on many last minute conference training presentations. I was told in June when it was time to start in these that they weren't going to be doing this. Now I'm scrambling to get them done. So that's the fun part. I'm also really excited about two templates that I just created for some big companies. I can say so myself, they're beautiful. and I get to build presentations from them. So I'm in the process of literally beta testing those templates.
That's cool. Awesome. Until you find, like, after it's distributed and you're like, oh, that would have been a great setting.
I know.
So. We're actually still in the process of a very long term. It's turned into a very extended time frame for a corporate template following that. And one of the stipulations is it's not distributable until you approve the design. And I mean, there's presets on presets, or I should say style guide elements on style guide elements all in place. But it's not releasable per our contract until, because part of the project is creating their core document set, is we want to use it to develop we said at least 15 of the presentations, just so we can see if we missed anything. Because again, it's like that beta test your own thing, but we want to do it in real life. So they agreed to that in the contract phase. But now that we're so far down the road, they would like to release it earlier, but we're almost to the point where we get to start using our own template for that same thing.
That's the best.
There's so many great things happening. Couple of new designers in the office working through. I'll put some stuff up on Facebook or something, some of the new projects. We're just doing a bunch of kind of side internal projects just so everybody can kind of get familiar with our workflow and see what other people can do. Last episode, I think it was right on the day of the release, is the Presentation Guild did their first public webinar, which we had Derek Johnson from Microsoft. So this is kind of old news. If anybody's listening, you may have already seen it. But what you don't know is it went really flawless because we only met like 10 minutes ahead of time just to make sure a technology checks. We hadn't really gone through it, so I think the flow went really well. But there's almost 100 attendees, which was phenomenal. Oh, wow. For something that just got, you know, very quick, limited, you know, distribution of it's happening. And it is, if you didn't see this, it's PowerPoint Microsoft Program Manager demoing and explaining the new Zoom tool within PowerPoint, which is a very cool tool. It's basically a new and improved custom slideshow is one way to look at it. But that recording is available to the public for free at the Presentation Guild website. We'll put a link to it, or at least a link to the Presentation Guild so you can find it. But that did happen, and it's very cool.
I think that's one of the cool things. I mean, we obviously have close relationships with the PowerPoint development team. Most people don't and don't even know who they are, get to see them. But it's so cool to talk with somebody or see demos by somebody who literally wrote the software, who literally created these features and, you know, obviously is in an amazing position to describe them inside and out. And I know, you know, it's a new feature, but we already, you know, we all played with it, but we all learned things that we didn't know. We knew shortcuts and hacks and already that Derek showed us.
Yeah, it was cool.
And Oh, and because we are connected with the user community, we were able to provide Microsoft with the feedback they needed it to make it releasable. They incorporated a lot of the feedback that we passed on to them.
Yes, and there's some more to come. I'm hoping that there's more to come based on that feedback.
Exactly.
But it's cool because I do think, just like Adobe Creative Suite, you know, Microsoft Office 365, they get evolutionary step or they get evolution steps. They get to release small updates to it through the subscription model, just like Adobe's doing constantly. Now Microsoft's doing constantly, and I think this feature and a couple others will continue to evolve without as much of a delay or, I don't know, internal paperwork they've got to get things released. Pretty excited about it.
What's going on in the world of presentation otherwise in terms of news?
Well, the buzz, if you haven't already seen it, but the buzz has already started in social media around the Presentation Summit, which is a targeted user group conference made up of entirely of anyone who's listening here. It's your peers. So it's a unique environment to advance your skills, add value to your organization and your clients. I strongly encourage you to register for the conference, which is taking place in Vegas on October 23rd through the 25th.
And we're all speaking, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there's some other great speakers. Nancy Duarte and Suni Brown are keynote speakers. And
oh, the lineup's awesome.
I think it's going to be a great year.
Mm-hmm. Very exciting. I'm really excited about it. I only have missed one throughout since its inaugural launch. And it's a great event. I should also say, if you've never been to it, it is a smaller conference because I go to a lot of very large conferences with thousands and thousands of people. And I work, you know, graphics and coordination on tons of them. This one's fairly small and it does sell out every year, which I believe is part of the person who hosts it,
It's part of the design of it, I think. Caps at about 200 or maybe a little less.
It's right in there.
Maybe less. And it's like going home. There are new attendees every year, but it's just great to go back, see people you've seen before, and it feels like you're going home. I strongly recommend it. And I should just clarify, I'm not an official presenter, but I will be part of the presentation podcast, which will be featured live.
That's going to be fun. We'll talk more about that as we go on, but I'm very excited for that. Really excited. Okay, for today, we're going to talk about visual communication, which, if we define it, it's kind of how we summarize the core offerings at TLC Creative Services. We do visual communication. Key focus is presentation design. So from my perspective, visual communication is going to encompass anything that is seen: words, photos, iconography, videos, whether it's on slides, print pieces, billboards along the highway, trade show, large format displays. It could be web pages, HTML, email campaigns. I mean, everything is a visual element of design. Today, what we wanted to talk about was, we decided to jump into kind of the murky waters of images. What images are legal to use? What are our favorite resources for images? And some design tips when using images specifically in presentation design.
All right. And are we going to give our legal disclaimer now and many times in the future that we are not lawyers?
We're not lawyers.
We'll talk a little bit about what's legal, but we are not the end all. Seek your own legal counsel. We're not to be put on the stand for anything we say or do.
And as we're going to see, as I'll explain, even when you hear from a lawyer, that lawyer will always say, yeah, but this isn't exactly the end all be all. So
Start with royalty free. Speaking on the legal side, it's a major industry term. I think everybody's heard it, but they may not know what it is. So for our discussion, let's just kind of define it and have everyone talking about the same thing.
Yeah, I think today we are going to talk mostly about, or not completely about, royalty free. There are kind of two types of images though. There's rights managed and royalty free. So to jump back a second, rights managed are images where you basically lease the image for a while, where it's on an individual basis. You have to talk to whoever's licensing it and say, I'm going to use it for X, Y, and Z in this specific instance, and you pay a negotiated price based on that.
Actually, it's not X, Y, and Z as in three separate projects. It's I'm going to use it in X. This project exactly. Right here on this page and for this client.
Right. And there are cases where you can actually buy out an image completely, but it rights managed gets much more complicated, much more negotiated, much more expensive. Those are the kind of things where, you know, if you see a Coca-Cola ad using an image, that most likely rights managed. But royalty free came along a number of years ago because it used to mostly be rights managed, mm-hmm. Right?
Oh yeah.
And it was very complicated and expensive, and so they came up with this concept of royalty free, which means basically you just go and you pay a one-time fee for this. For their stipulations and you can't use it just for anything, but it's basically a much simple, like, off the shelf type thing. You don't have to negotiate, you don't have to talk. Here's the price for this image. You can use it in these situations. Go to it. And it's made it's sort of exploded the world of stock photography and made it much, much easier to use.
Much easier to use and much easier to be seen. I guess I would add royalty free. You'll probably see an image you've selected being used elsewhere, or you stand the increased likelihood that you'll buy an image royalty free and someone else will too.
Absolutely.
You do not, right. Yes.
And so, like, that whole rights managed thing, yes, there are times where you could actually buy it out completely, but let's say somebody's licensing an image to Coca-Cola, and Coke wants to know that Pepsi is not going to use that image. So that company will not sell it to Pepsi. They might sell it to Toyota, because it's not a competitor. But mm-hmm. That's one of the advantages of rights managed. One of the disadvantages, as you point out, of royalty free is, yeah, you might see it somewhere else.
And I'll add that royalty free does not mean that the image is free.
Correct.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Okay. You still have to pay for it.
There's still a price for it. Exactly.
So a little side note on the royalty free versus rights managed, just to kind of wrap this up. Royalty free, it's pretty much what we're talking about today. That's the iStock photo, the Adobe Stock, the Getty Image subscription services. They're going to be your royalty free. You get the image through the subscription and you have it for as many projects as you want. Rights managed, again, show of hands. Sandy, Nolan, do you use rights managed ever?
Never.
So it's not going to be within our realm. The cost is prohibitive. Global licensing might be a need where you know something's going to be used and distributed.
Well, no, I take that back. I use it in when a client has purchased rights management.
Okay,
so
I will take it back. We don't source out or research rights managed, but you're right. There are images supplied by some clients where they have received it or they've purchased a rights managed thing. And that's even a little bit different because they've bought it out so they can use it in any mm-hmm. of their communications. It's not for a specific presentation or brochure, but
exactly.
Yeah, I'm not going to source out a rights managed, but if it's provided to me and I receive the note that it's rights managed, I'm going to make use of it.
Yeah, I've done that. I've done that too. I didn't realize that, but as long as the client says, yep, you're free to use this, that's fine.
So what royalty-free services have you used, guys?
I've used a bunch in the past. iStock, Getty, ThinkStock. These days, I pretty much stick with Shutterstock. You've heard me talk about that before. Mm-hmm. I just like them. They have a lot of images. I've been with them for years, and I like the subscription model that they kind of started, and other people have since copied. But I stick mostly with Shutterstock these days.
I use TLC. I myself use. We've used ThinkStock for several.
The Royal Eye.
Yeah. So TLC has used ThinkStock for several years. It's a Getty owned property, and it's kind of a mashup of all kinds of their mm-hmm. of their subscription options. So it's kind of a nice one. We've switched to Adobe Stock, which has just come into a user level with subscription basing that would work for us. And I like both those. I also use Audio Blocks and Music Blocks and Digital Juice, all of those on subscription for, you know, video, audio, After Effects type of templates, other things along those lines. Everything we do is on subscription basis now.
Well, I use iStock and Big Stock, so they're kind of one and the same. I've used, you know why I use ThinkStock? Well, I like to use ThinkStock because it is a conglomeration and it's just a single resource. I may find an image on there and have to go to buy it on iStock because I don't have a ThinkStock subscription. But I do use it as a resource. I like Shutterstock. There's Dreamtime. And then, Troy, you mentioned audiobooks and music blocks. I do purchase, in the old days, we called it needle drop music.
In the leather lounge, that's what it's called?
Exactly, in the leather lounge. I use production tracks for a lot
of audio. Oh, they've been around forever. Yeah.
They have, and I've been happy with them. I like the variety.
We'll have to put all those in the, yes, the notes. Oh, there's another one. Every once in a while, I'll use a small site. Like there's one I used for a project recently called Death to the Stock Photo, which is just an awesome name, but it's a very small collection of highly curated imagery that is, it's a freemium model. So it is basically Creative Commons. It's free to use. You don't have to pay for it. But if you want to get their back catalog, like more than a few months, you have to pay for like a subscription to it. But but that's sort of specialty stock, I think. And there's a ton of sites out there just for sort of small specialty stuff.
So lots of stuff out there, definitely, yeah, along the royalty-free services, and most of them are subscription-based at this point, different models along that.
And so it sounds like most of the sites you guys use are subscription, right?
We do a subscription, and therefore everybody just downloads the actual image and puts it in there. If the client doesn't want it, we're going to replace it out, but the subscription model has just changed workflow. There is too much time spent dealing with watermarked images, in my opinion.
I agree.
In addition, the watermarks are nice and subtle, enough that they get through review cycles and suddenly they show up in the live print piece or the live presentation, and you're like, where did that come from?
Yeah, that's why I like the subscription model, is because you can download the high-res, non-watermarked images, and I never hit my cap. I think mine is like $750 a month with Shutterstock. So yeah, I'll go ahead and download 5-10 images as examples, knowing that 9 will get cut. And then I don't have to worry about swapping in the non-watermarked again. So I like that buffet model, like all you can eat versus the a la carte.
Yep.
Well, I tend to be more than the a la carte because I buy credits at my resources. I guess I've been comfortable with that. I don't feel like I will ever even come close to my limit. What is the monthly fee for Shutterstock?
I think it's you pay on an annual basis, but they split it down by month. I think I pay $1,250 or $1,500 a year, maybe.
That's not bad.
No, it's not bad at all. And there are discounts you can, and I've negotiated with them to sort of get rates, yes, but that's pretty much sort of the standard. But what I used to do, and I, because at the time, like when I was first starting out, $1,500 was a significant, outlay. What I used to do to justify that, I would charge each client, if they used any imagery, I'd charge a $200 per project fee for unlimited imagery. I'd say, whether you use, five images or 500, it's unlimited, $200. And that was, no client ever balked at it, but eventually it just got, Nolan, it's a cost of doing business, and I just took that fee off.
We've done the same thing. I had a fee structure, and we pretty much eliminated it. Some of our larger clients, we just charge a one-time fee and give it to them up front. And smaller projects, we add in a little bit more to the budget to say it includes imagery at this point. So, and the watermark thing, only because this is probably, unfortunately, it does work for Microsoft products, but Adobe, now that we're using the Adobe stock, you can download the watermark. So we're going to say we're working in a layered Photoshop file. You can download the watermark image, composite everything with it, send off your proof. It's watermarked. If the client says yes, Adobe does have a pretty cool thing where you just say images, this layer or this image approved, and it updates the image to the high res version. Without you needing to download it, it puts it into your project folder. It puts it into that. Unfortunately, if you put the watermark image into PowerPoint, it doesn't see that connection, and then you still have to go do it.
Right.
So therefore, I just thought I'd throw it in there because it's a pretty cool idea.
And I was going to add, I think it's really cool. I don't pass on the charge to my clients. I don't do that anymore. So I guess I'm in the same boat as you guys. But speaking of charges, the cost of images is next to nothing, isn't it, compared to the old agency? My old agency
compared
days,
anyway, to what it used to be. Yeah, I mean,
right.
I mean, it's before when. Well, again, we're only talking about royalty free. But even when royalty free came out, you could spend $200, $300, $400, $500 on an image, without batting an eye. And now you
well
you
and know, then it still... got really fun because then you could buy, instead of one image, you could buy a DVD with like 10 or 12 images for $500-$600. So then you'd buy it for one project, and your goal was over the next four or five projects was how can I use these images, charge the client so I could pay for this, actually make a profit off of this at some point. That was old school.
I forgot about those.
Those were great. We had the I remember my first design job, we had that shelf of the CDs, and I was in charge of, and I would make the case every once in a while, like, you know, we really need more. Can I spend an extra $600 on this one DVD? And, you know, be like, okay. And then some of them, the best ones were the ones with layered Photoshop files.
Oh, yeah.
Because then you could, like, extract that sure. pattern. Now I can't even imagine buying a DVD.
Hey, we still have that shelf because I can't bear to part with the $20,000 I invested in, whatever those things were.
Gosh.
We've never looked at them.
My gosh.
I don't think anybody on our design team has even opened one up, but they're there just to say. Oh,
I still have copies in a closet somewhere.
I think it might be fun to put those, write a blog with those sometime. Just to,
oh yeah, look at old,
or create a meme or something.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
There used to be that whole sort of watermark thing. There for in situations like that, and there are still situations like Getty does have some high end royalty free. You can still spend $500 on a royalty free image. I mean, the stuff is out there. Cavan Images, CAVAN, has some beautiful imagery, but I think that stuff starts at like $250. But anyway, some of these higher end sites, you can sign up with them where you'll be able to get non-watermarked comps. And what it's a trust thing that, you know, you basically say, look, I need the non-watermark comp to show my client. But if we end up using it, we'll pay you. You can do that in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. For that higher end stuff, if you're a legitimate agency or designer,
it's all still options. But the business model and the working model has changed a lot. So, speaking of change, there was a recent comment by, I'll just say, someone in our industry about images and photo services. I personally am not certain, for what the conversations that seem to be swirling around, that everyone interpreted it the way it was intended to be, or at least the way the use rights from sites is intended. The way I think things were interpreted is that designers cannot purchase and include images in design projects for clients, but the clients need to purchase images themselves, hand it to the designer, and therefore the client has legal use of it. It's a hard interpretation of this very confusing, where are images legal in the day of, let's do a web search and find an image and go with it.
Right. Basically, I agree with you. I think the interpretation was that you can't, as a designer, cannot use any stock imagery for client work unless that client themselves purchases the imagery. And that's just simply not the case.
Well, and user agreements have changed so much so in the transition from print to digital. So we just really have to comb through all of them to understand the individual stock photo resources rules.
So the term I always use now is in the context of. So what that means is I can purchase an image, through a subscription or whatever, and then I can use that image, the royalty-free image, to create a slide or a presentation or whatever, or a graphic, and I can then sell that composed design to a client. That's generally what these usage agreements allow for. What I cannot do is I can't download that image and then just give or sell, either one, the JPEG to the client to do whatever they want with. So you can use.
Do you tell your clients that they cannot use that image? So I've given you this design, this slide that includes this image. You may not use it in any other context.
You may use the slide in any context you want. You may not extract the image, which obviously in PowerPoint is very easy to do.
Right.
You cannot extract that image and use that image on your website for a marketing piece.
Or in another presentation slide.
That's correct.
Yeah, I think that's kind of on this whole thing that came out of it is, yes, we secure images for our clients all the time for use in a project, and we've handed off the project, and therefore that image meets the legal terms of being included in a project, and it's going to be used for that. Now, we can also reuse that image because it's royalty-free. We're allowed to use it for multiple projects in other presentations, or it could even be the point of we're supplying a print piece to the client and a presentation piece with coordinated graphics, and it could be used in multiple instances. But the client, per the legal terms of the EULAs, they cannot grab an image and put it into their own slides. Hey, this is a great image. I'm going to put it on this slide. Technically, at that point, they don't have a subscription, and they've put it into a new piece, so they have a little bit of a problem there as far as do they have rights to it. And the other thing is, and I think this is where it really comes up, is client says, hey, we would like to use this in our presentation. You know, can you just send this over, this image, to drop into that project we are working on?
No.
Well, you're not designing it. That literally is called a zero-cost sale. So you've now sold an image, you didn't make any money on it, to a client, and therefore that's illegal. That's not allowed. You're not allowed to become a resource of handing off images to a client to use as they want. So there's some... This is a really sticky thing. I am going to put in the show notes, and I gave everybody the link to this. It's a little bit old. It's from a site called Stock Photo Secrets. It's just kind of a fun one, but it's a lot of information about basically stock photography in general, and it's a good resource. Especially if you're a newer designer, and the article is called "Can I Use My Licensed Stock Photo for a Client?" And I'll throw that in there just because it's a good read. It's good information. Cool.
So partly because of the sort of the conversation, and also because I am asked constantly by clients, can I use this or I want to use it? I looked at the Shutterstock agreement, and I had some questions. So I actually got on the phone for about a half an hour with one of the lawyers at Shutterstock and had a interesting and fascinating conversation. And at the end, I'll tell you a bit about it, but at the end, he said, you know, I loved having this conversation because nobody ever reads those agreements. So it's nice to talk to somebody who's actually read what I wrote.
Oh, that's awesome.
yeah. And he did. So this guy, has been with Shutterstock from the beginning and has written, he is the one, that has written most of their agreements, or certainly had a decent hand in it. So you would think that he knows it backwards and forwards, and he's got that fancy law degree. But as I've said in the past, a lawyer's favorite response whenever you ask a question is, it depends. And I heard that a lot. I also got that I would ask a number of questions, which we'll get to, and his response, I would say, oh, so according to the agreement, I can do this, right? Or I can't do that. And his response was, well...
Oh, no.
Which is not very comforting, but
no.
Okay, so let me give you sort of the rundown on this conversation. Shutterstock has three levels of licenses. The standard, which is what I use, is sort of the basic. That's what you get with the subscription and everything. Then they also have these other levels, which you pay more for through subscription or individual, called enhanced and premier licenses. And each one of those allows for more usage, more stuff with the image. More eyeballs on it, different industries. Premier allows you to actually reassign the license to a client, and that's sometimes necessary. And you know, agencies or designers actually need to like change the registration. So basically, you can purchase it, then down the road, your client is actually the one that owns it. So we'll get to that too. But the first thing he said was that they look at their competitors all the time, and we mentioned a bunch of them. He said the trend is that competitors have been releasing simpler and simpler usage agreements, which I think we've noticed. Troy, you pointed out Adobe Stocks is like a 3 or 4 line, you know, couple of bullet points.
It's a huge reason I actually shifted to them, just because they're – and actually, it's kind of funny. I was expecting it to be incredibly thorough legalese and difficult to interpret. I think it's one of the easiest ones out there. And it was a big factor in our decision for subscription services for this year.
Yeah, I mean, now I will say, if you look at the bottom of that page, there is a link to the more detailed, you know, legalese and everything. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, the trend is basically to tell people what they can't do with an image, because that's sort of the easier thing. and just say, you know, here are the four ways you cannot use it. And then other than that, go wild. And part of the reason is because design and media and everything has gotten so much more complicated that it's hard to define all of use cases because they're constantly changing in a way. And in fact, the word presentation apparently used to be in the Shutterstock agreement, but now they took it out and they say that it falls under multimedia production, which is, you know, what does multimedia production mean? Well, it can mean a lot of things. At the same time, what does presentation mean?
Yeah.
So why did they take it out? Do you know? Was there?
I think in an effort to simplify things, but after our conversation, I think I might have convinced him that it needs to go back in.
Right.
For example, so this is one of the questions I posed to him. Under that agreement, multimedia production, or it says that there's a $10,000 cap on a production budget for standard licenses for these areas, film, TV, broadcast, which makes sense because they don't want a Hollywood movie, you know, spending just a few dollars on an image and then putting it in their movie. So that's where the $10,000 cap. So basically, if you're making a movie for more than $10,000, you need to bring, you know, you need to pay more. And that's totally fine. However, also included in that list, film, TV, broadcast, is multimedia production.
Oh, really?
So I said, okay, well, you've said presentation is multimedia production. That means if I charge a client more than $10,000 for a project, does that mean I have to use an enhanced license? And his answer was, well, we wouldn't interpret it that way. And that's he kept saying that. And he also said, our license is what we want it to be, which is a real nice, you know, CYA. But
yeah,
essentially, there are these levels of interpretation, and they certainly would not go after somebody if they're, you know, making a PowerPoint presentation using an image and the budget is $11,000, if they even find that out somehow.
And so here I am talking legal. I'm not sure this is a good idea, but my understanding is multimedia production is public distributed works. So that would be a movie production, like you're talking about, where a presentation is not a public fee access thing. And that's kind of where you get a little tricky, because a keynote speaker at a conference could be considered a, you know, people paid a fee to it. But so you're getting a little bit, you know, is this a thing that's going to be distributed to the public? Most likely not. And that's where I think multimedia production would fall under things there. But that's an interesting problem.
Yeah, I mean, the other sort of presentation-specific thing is your standard license does not allow for use in, quote, templates. Now, that's where it ends. And I said, well, okay, so if I create a presentation for a client, a one-off, no problem. But what if I create a template for a client that they're going to use internally, for many years?
This is really
And he said, well, aren't we interpret templates as templates for resale?
Correct.
Okay.
So then that's cool. Like, so they don't want this standard license being used in a presentation template that you then put up online and sell.
And sell.
If you're going to do that, then you have to use the enhanced license and pay more. Totally cool. But that's where this sort of semantics gets in the way.
Yeah, we might have to rename a PowerPoint template to a presentation master, and then it's done.
Yeah, that. Yeah, I don't. Yeah.
No, but it's because
how about a multimedia production master reuse document?
I did have a hang up on the templates thing, and I really think that's more for website templates, things that are purchased and modified by an end client. But
they don't want somebody using it for a WordPress template that they then sell and then becomes the use, 50,000 websites end up using it. And that's actually the web is where you can really get into trouble using stock imagery, much less so for presentation, because people just don't see it. It has such a limited audience for the most part. But people need to know that if you use an image on a website, what these stock houses do is they have bots that go out scraping the web for their images. And if they find, such and such image on a website and they decide to investigate it, they discover that, oh, you did not pay for this image or your designer didn't, they'll come after you.
Yeah, that's part of the legal profession. we won't say
so
what.
And I've heard of that happening. And in some cases, you know, it's a genuine mistake, or, oh, my designer did it. You don't know who that person is. They actually bought it. No problem. But you can get caught on the web.
So that said, do you think, well, it comes down to money too. Are these stock houses making more money than ever, or less money? Because,
well, they have more competition than ever.
Well, there's a higher usage. That's a great question, because I hadn't really thought about it. You know, the user base is vast now. I mean, like, massive, but the fees have gone down. I mean, you know, we just talked about it. We were paying $300, $400, $500, $600 for an image in the past for print use. Now we're paying, you know, that same amount of money for an unlimited, almost unlimited, all you can eat image use offering per year. So they're making less money in that sense, but I think there's far more users. So great question. Right. Let's talk to the financial people and ask how they're trending.
Yeah, can you open up your books? We'd like to see. And there's been a lot. They've been buying up, the big companies have been buying up the small ones left and right.
Consolidation. Yeah. Getty's the biggest.
Yep.
That's a really good question. I have to imagine at the end of the day, probably they're probably not making any more money than they were, or significantly more, years ago. But the business has changed dramatically.
And there's less, for the lack of a better word, I guess, less overhead. It's more automated. You know, there's not that kind.
I think there's more overhead, because now there's server capacity they need to take care of. There's a lot more meta tagging. There's a lot more, you know, compared to the old catalog days, I think there's actually more involved now than there was back in the day, I would say. The other factor would be, I know we talked about this before. There's the whole, what type of, you know, royalty free is great, but then there's also the definition. Nolan, did you guys talk about editorial versus commercial? Because like on Getty sites, they actually have, this is editorial. You can do an editorial search. You can do a commercial search. Commercial being what generally everybody uses. Editorial being something from the Olympics, you know, an image you want to throw from the Olympics.
That just or a celebrity, or not even. It could just be like an image of a cool, like I did something recently. There was this cool image of this African fisherman like in a boat, but it was editorial. Like, don't know why, it just was. Yeah, so they do make the differentiation under royalty free of editorial versus commercial, and you'll see there, if you want to use an image, you'll usually have to check a box saying, I understand this image can only be used for editorial purposes. And in the EULA, they define editorial as non-commercial. So I said, hey, I've got a lot of nonprofit clients. They're non-commercial. Can I use editorial images there? And then that led to a 5-minute discussion on the First Amendment and fair use. And we're not going to define First Amendment and journalistic and commentary. I kind of left it there because I wasn't going to get an answer. But basically, you know, it's at the end of the day with all this stuff, it's up to the courts to decide, if you really want to take it that far, what is fair use, what is not. Or it's up to a lawyer to advise you to the best of their ability. This is what you can do. This is what you can't. You know, just because this lawyer told me one thing does not mean that I would lose in court or that I would win in court, you know, based on what he said. That's basically our legal guidance.
So the contracts, the user agreements are becoming simpler, I guess, but it's still overwhelming. People, this is the big elephant in the room, guys. We need to talk about it. What about using Google?
Just a web search?
That was part of our discussion too. I said people are intimidated, who don't, like non-designers who are like, stock imagery. They just get intimidated by those stuff, and they end up going to Google and stealing an image, right? So do you go to Google and steal images or source images?
I would say logos, yes. Ideas, like, I don't know how to define that, but conceptual elements, yes.
Yeah.
Client, you know, internal work, sure, mood boards, whatnot. But for client work, we really shy away from it. It is going to have to be a yes, in the case of we're working with a client and we needed to show some of their manufacturing floor, they didn't have access to their own stuff. And this is the actual corporate client, but their website did. So as long as I had an email, I got an email saying, yeah, go ahead and grab images from our site. So I did a Google search Bing image actually is my preferred, but we did a web-based search and we pulled images from their site, which was very unusual for us, but I did get a thing saying it's okay, and that was their resource for it. So, I mean, there has to be some really strict parameters for us to say yes.
Well, there's fair use too. I mean, if you are taking something from the web and then commenting on it, or I mean, that again, we get into these First Amendment issues. You know, fair use will always be able to be used. You can use a photo of the cover of the New York Times if you're, or a magazine if you're commenting on it. And I will tell clients, you know, we always, you know, look for stock, you know, stock imagery. We always want to pay for it, but there are certain topics that you will never find on stock. If you're looking for a product, like a commercial product you want to show, stock imagery doesn't have, you know, the latest, you know, whatever. I'm trying to make up something. So, you know, if you want to show a car, you know, mm-hmm. it's not going to have the latest. So that's where, again, sometimes we, you know, we're not going to go out to the website necessarily and ask permission. Hey, can we show this new Toyota Camry? You know, but I often consider those types of things fair use. Or a photo of a person who's not a celebrity. You know, like if you need to show a picture of the CEO in your presentation, and it gets tricky because maybe that photographer has the rights to it, even though it's on their website. But how else are you going to show this person?
Yeah, good point. Well, I'll pick up logos too. However, I recently ran into this with one of my main clients, a very large company who will seek permission for every logo that's used in a presentation.
Admirable. It really is.
It is admirable. Really? And they're also the same company who will not allow, they flat out, you may not use any web searched imagery in our presentations. You will only use Getty. We have a subscription to Getty. So it's a no-brainer for designers, but educating our clients is so important. And this large company in particular, a couple of them that I'm working with, are really making efforts to protect their employees and, more importantly, themselves.
I don't know if that logo thing is all that admirable. I had a client years ago who was giving a proposal. They were a vendor. They worked with Disney a lot. And they were giving a proposal to Disney for another project. And at some point in the presentation, I put a logo of Disney on a slide. And they said, we can't use that. I said, what do you mean? I said, you are pitching Disney to work with them, and the logo's out there. Do you think they're going to come after you for an internal proposal using their logo? And I said, well, we just don't want to get into it. I don't know. I can't imagine. The Disney legal department is litigious, but I can't imagine them being that litigious.
Yep. Anyway, it comes back down to the concept of educating the everyday user. It's still very, very intimidating. They're going to, by default, even this company I just work with, the person that turned over a presentation to me, chock full of Google images, and she kind of bragged about it. And it's easier. Even though she knows she can go to Getty and get approved images, it's too hard. It's too complicated.
Don't forget about TinEye.com and Google reverse image search. Because if you are working on slides and there is an image, you don't know where it came from, it could very well be, you know, purchasable. So I do that all the time. If I find an image and like, oh, we want to use this, I'll TinEye it, find out, oh, yeah, I can purchase it on iStock. I can get it from Getty. I can get it from Shutterstock. And then I will, just to know that I'm using it legally.
And I have forgotten about TinEye. Thank you for bringing that up.
So Sandy, on the projects, because we got to know this up front, because this actually adds to a budget or an estimate to a project. But there's several clients that are they need to track image use, so they're protecting themselves. Do you at some point reference the image either on slide, off slide, in presenter notes, where it originated from?
You mean with their subscription?
We use a couple of client subscriptions, and we use ours where they just need to know that the image was pulled from, and it could even be internal corporate imagery, because the one client I'm thinking of has a resource for imagery, and we put in the speaker notes every image. We basically annotate what every image is on that slide and where it came from. So if we got it from, say, ThinkStock, we would just put the ThinkStock file name.
Well, that's a great idea. I don't do that, but I think that's...
It takes a lot of time. And it gets hard with slides that move around and you copy an image to a new slide. You got to take that notation. Mm-hmm. So we actually have a line item for content management on those projects because it's not one client. It's a couple of them. Hey, I'll throw a side note out there for everybody that wants to go grab an image, because I have in the past done work with Ferrari Automotive, and that was an awesome client. But they do have a subtle differentiation in everything they produce for their logo, because they're very, very they guard their logo and their branding really well. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, I just did an image search for Ferrari logo, and I know what the difference is. And it's pretty awesome seeing all these logos that are not obviously sanctioned by Ferrari, because there is a subtle difference in the typography of what they do. And you would not know it unless you knew what to look for. And a legal team could pull it out. I'm just doing a general, I just typed in Ferrari logo. And I can tell you, just looking at, three dozen images here, that half of them are not sanctioned because of, so there are things that are done at a corporate level.
That's fascinating.
It's very interesting.
Now I really want to know what it is.
I won't say it online because it was one of those under NDA. Here's what you need to know. And here's the logo. Yeah. And it was pretty interesting. So anyways, new topic.
There's I'll give you another sort of interesting story side note. You had mentioned using a Time magazine cover or something. Years ago, I did a TED talk for the CEO of Getty Images. So it was a great, great project. And one of the coolest things was we could use any Getty image.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So we had this huge stock house, and the TED talk topic was images that have changed the world. And at one point he wanted to show one of the images from Abu Ghraib, that whole scandal. But Getty did not have any of those images. They were owned by somebody else. But we kept looking, and finally found an image of a protest where a woman was carrying a printed out copy of one of those photos. So they owned that image, and we were allowed to use that. So it was a very iconic image, and this woman was holding up a picture of that iconic image, and apparently that was kosher. So I don't know if in the future you ever sort of run into something like that. I wonder if
if
you can get around that.
Picture of a picture.
If the picture of the picture adds something to it, and in this case, it definitely did. If you just crop in right onto the picture, I'm not quite sure that would cover it.
I added the border.
Exactly.
Okay.
Creative Commons. How about that? So we touched on that a little bit, but there is imagery out there that you can use for free, right? And it's called Creative Commons or public domain. Imagery. Do you guys play in the sandbox at all?
Well, I think most people would encounter that on Flickr images. Where else would you see that?
Creative Commons is a designation that if you as a photographer take a photo, you can say it's Creative Commons. And we're not going to get into this, but there are levels of Creative Commons. Like, you need to attribute, you can't change it, or you can change it, you can sell it, you can't sell it. They're all levels, and you have to understand which they are. But you could take an image, put it up on your own site or on a stock site that are out there. So it's not under Flickr, but it's somewhere else with the Creative Commons. And there's actually Wiki. I believe it's wiki.commons that is like a Wikipedia of imagery and graphics and things that are Creative Commons. Flickr is a good place to search for it, but it's definitely...
I'm just saying that's probably the most... widely publicly known area.
And the way to do it is you do an advanced search and there's a check mark for Creative Commons.
So you guys use these?
No.
I do. I use them occasionally, and I use every once in a while I have a client who wants to create a Creative Commons presentation, and it's a real pain because they want to be able to put it on SlideShare and have it be used. So in those cases, I have to find Creative Commons imagery, and I tell them up front. I said, "This is going to cost you more. It's going to cost you more than it would
because of content management side of things." Yeah,
exactly. Searching. Yeah.
Now, we used to do there are. I think it kind of rotated for a while where people would say, "Oh, if it's on Flickr, I can use it because it's public domain. It's under a Creative Commons because everything uploaded to Flickr, my understanding is, it becomes under Creative Commons." But there are literally variations on that term. that, I mean, there's public domain dedication, there's public domain mark, there's attribution, non-commercial use, there's attribution licensing. There, I mean, right. So using the term Creative Commons, I just think it's a dangerous term, and people say they can get it for free online, but you can still end up in some problems, and I think a subscription fee and just avoiding the whole issue is probably better. The only time, I'm going to finish with this one, the only time I think that I would use a Creative Commons search is more along the lines of those editorial or local environmental event, or like you need a picture of some parliament building in a destination. That is probably a good use for those.
Exactly. And so that's where, and this can be used for people who don't want to pay for stock imagery. We pay for it. We have subscriptions, but I'll use it for things like you said, and I'll tell people, if you don't have a stock subscription, you want to show a photo of the Eiffel Tower, there's no reason you have to pay for that, because somebody has put up a really good photo of the Eiffel Tower on Shutter, on Flickr, Creative Commons, they'll let you do anything you want with it, go there. You don't have to pay for it. And a lot of my clients, they do a lot of international work, so I will need to find a photo of a Tanzanian farmer, for example. And I just can't find it on Shutterstock anywhere else, but I'll go into Creative Commons and somebody took a trip and have all these photos and their Creative Commons, great.
Yeah. Yeah, I did a similar thing with Lexus, and we needed to show a couple of the international dealerships, and it was like, well, they didn't even, you know, there wasn't an internal library of those things that I could access, and yeah, so we went to Creative Commons and found somebody that basically, here's me standing next to, you know, the dealership in whichever country. Well, we're going to crop you out, use the dealership, and, you know, it's under creative license because you're not selling your image, and therefore, you know, we were able to make our collage and kind of call out the point. And just one example, but that's what I was talking about with buildings. Sometimes you can get some cool stuff that way, but it's not open to everybody. It's not an end all. This is the easiest solution.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think so. I don't use it. I play it safe.
I'll
buy the Eiffel Tower image. It's not expensive.
Oh, well, I'll buy.
Yeah, but can you get the Tanzanian farmer?
Find me a Tanzanian farmer, Sandy.
Is he really Tanzanian? What tells you? Because I don't know the difference.
I've had clients insist on it, and it'll say, sub-Saharan farmer, and they're like, but is that Tanzanian? I'm like, oh, really? Okay.
Okay.
Hey, on this, I have this great infographic called Stock Photo Safety Card. It's totally a spoof on like a workplace safety, you know, like don't leave water out to slip on, or like an emergency card in case of an emergency landing. Here's what you're gonna do. I will post the YouTube link. It's an animated thing. I have the download thing, and I don't want to put that up because I don't know where I got it from, but I do know I can find it on YouTube, and it's of real value to anybody just wanting kind of like this tongue-in-cheek overview of what's good and bad within this whole realm of, is it allowable or is it not? I think it's really fun. I'll put a link to that.
So where is it?
Oh, I'll have to post it. Okay. Yeah, you could probably go to YouTube and just search stock photo safety card. I'll put the link in the show notes. So if you're listening in, you do have to go to the show notes for something. But it's a really well done. I think it's a little bit older, but it's funny. And I keep the PDF of that and bring it out. Okay, let's shift off of the whole legal scene and talk design, because that's what we love and I love anyways. Let's talk about the design aspect of using images in presentations.
What specifically?
You get to ask a question there, Nolan. You lead us with a question.
Okay. All right. Well, okay. How about this? Imagery, we've kind of been indicating photography, but technically an image can also be an illustration or a graphic, right? So do you guys mostly use photography or graphics and illustrations? What do you like using in presentation?
I've changed over the years. I used to use mostly all photography, even for illustrations, even for icons. But even before the advent of merge shapes that allow us to make icons and illustrations so much more easily in PowerPoint, I started building my own illustrations. So I would say right now, I might even be leaning toward less photography than illustration.
And when you say illustrations, are these hand illustrations or line drawings or
vector type? Vector. Think that. Yep. Infographic style, icons. You know, it's very, very trendy right now, and that too will change. But
and these are very, I mean, you can create them yourself, but I assume you also purchase some of this stuff.
I do.
As well.
Exactly. Recently, we didn't have this discussion during our font podcast, but this is new to me. It's buying a web font.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
For symbols. I love it. It was the quality. SS Gizmo was something I purchased recently, and I absolutely love it.
So you blow those up and use them as vector imagery at that point instead of?
I converted them to vector using the add-in, the text outline. Oh, that's a great use for that.
I pull them into Illustrator and do that and export them as EMFs to drop into, you know, presentation design.
Oh, I think I eliminated
that's
a few
great
steps
idea. Oh, that's a really, really, that's a tip PowerPoint. Right there.
I've never used a web font. I've definitely used icon sets, which give me a whole bunch of icons to then use. And I assume most of you guys have a storehouse of previously used icons and illustrations.
Oh yes.
Yeah, we should talk about how we organize our files and archives and everything else another time. I think that's one of the, well, I won't divert into a whole nother topic, but we have, you know, new designers on our team. We've finished this like 2 month long interview process and this and that. And that's one of the biggest things is here's how we structure our projects. And part of that conversation is here's how we always keep all original imagery from the download site so we can say where it came from if it's requested information. So we keep a art source folder with the original file name, which will indicate if it came from Think Stock or Adobe Stock or client provided. It'll give us that information. So that's part of that information flow. We mostly use photography. I still love photography, but I am not really big on just dropping a rectangle JPEG in there. I like to modify it. Give it a personality, a lot of custom cropping, feathered edges, or it's all illustration. I'm not really big on the presentations that kind of jump around and do, you know, kind of a mix just depending on what it is they found, because they found an illustration that matches the topic, but, you know, the other 90% of the presentation is photography. I just did this great project where we did photography with like illustrations on top of it. So we created, it was really, really fun because we got to do all the custom work, but it was like, you know, here's a scene and here's the iconography style illustration on top of it. And that was fun. So in that case, that was the style. So we used it throughout.
Yeah. I mean, I use tons and tons of icons, but I still, it depends. I sort of mix and match, but obviously I try to make them, make it all consistent from a design perspective. But I think, you know, imagery can get very, very specific. And sometimes that's not a good thing. So, you know, you're doing something, for example, for a medical, you know, company, and you've got these images of patients and they keep coming back with, well, you know, they're too old, they're too young, they're too sick, they're not sick enough. It gets too specific. Whereas if you use an illustration or an icon, you know, oh, well, okay, that's a heart, or that's a, you know, that's an image it's an icon of a doctor. It's not specific. So I think you get away with a lot more in a good way.
Sometimes
it can be much more useful.
Yeah, sometimes not. We had a whole discussion on a project. We were representing patients. And okay, so I have a situation where sometimes a photo is more appropriate than a illustration or an icon. Client conversation is they actually have an icon set for it's in the medical field, but the dilemma was their general patient icon didn't represent what they needed, because this particular presentation we were working on, or the segment of the presentation I should say, was for a particular patient set. And you know you've got different types. You know, you got your older male, you've got your ethnic or non-Caucasian male, it could be a woman specific medical treatment or device. So they wanted to go away from their own style guide of iconography to really represent the patient population they were addressing specifically. So it was an interesting conversation where, even though the presentation was set up for basically an iconography and illustration styling, we took that particular one and turned it to more of a photo-based, so we could represent very visually a particular, in this case, person characteristic. So lots of conversations. So it varies with every project.
Yeah, and I mean, it really comes down to style. I mean, if a company wants to be a little cute or illustrative, you know, you can use that. If a company is, you know, all about their products, for example, and we want to see those products, you're obviously going to be using imagery. I did have one point a client wanted the deck to be as small as physically possible for some reason, and I said, well, then we maybe shouldn't use imagery. So I think so. We did all icons and
oh yeah, the vector. Well, as long as it's vector, as long as it's vector. Because there's a lot of illustrations that come in as a JPEG. It looks like an illustration, but you're still picking up the file size of that raster image. So yeah, vector work is phenomenal. I mean, going back to the Flash days, you know, if you could do everything in all, you could create this amazing animated opening sequence, and it would be like here, 800K. You know, like, wait, I can't even get a JPEG, you know, for a full frame that big. You know, it's just vector work is phenomenal from that standpoint. And I, you know, I personally would love to see PowerPoint expand the vector capabilities so we could leverage that, because things are getting bigger. I mean, photos, we're not even talking about videos and other things that could be embedded and just make file sizes ginormous. But yeah, so if you have a file size limitation or parameter, that could easily dictate the difference between images and illustrations.
Yeah. Every once in a while, I'll see a file in my Finder, and it's like under a meg, and I stop and like, wait, what's wrong here? And then I realize, oh, I've only used icons and no imagery. Okay, I guess that makes sense.
Hey, let's use that as a jumping point to final kind of tips, resources, design ideas, because I have one specific to that.
I'll jump in.
I'll start with that. So if you download an EP, now, okay, let's clarify. I'm working in a Windows environment and I'm using Windows Explorer to see my files. It does not display or show a thumbnail of .eps files or vector artwork. So my tip is if you have an EPS and you're downloading images, go ahead and download the JPEG of it as well. It could be a smaller one so you don't increase your file size. We generally just download large, but that way in Windows Explorer, you get to see the image, and then right next to it, because the file names are the same except for the extension, is the EPS. So you know you've got an EPS of it. It just really bothers me when we open up a folder of imagery and it's all .eps, and I'm like, darn it, I'm on a Windows machine and I'm using the baked-in Windows Explorer and I can't actually preview these. So it's time to jump to another program or start opening files. Or that JPEG's there, it makes it a quick, easy thing. I'm assuming on the Mac, because I can't actually remember, you can preview EPS files and .ai files and everything.
Yeah.
That's totally eliminates that whole tip for that environment, because some things are smarter on different operating systems.
Yeah. We're not really going to get too into the technical. That could be a whole other episode. But JPEG versus PNGs with imagery, just remember, PNGs will be bigger, but they won't degrade. JPEGs, as you save them over and over between presentations specifically, they tend to degrade, which sometimes is fine for certain images, but if you have like a logo or something else, sometimes they get very blurry very quickly.
Yeah, that's actually kind of a Microsoft. I mean, first of all, saving a JPEG over and over, you can continue compressing a JPEG, you know, because it just takes the compression level isn't constant like a ping image where it's locked in. But you can, with the file save as, or if you move an image to another presentation and that presentation has compression turned on, you can inadvertently or not knowingly actually be losing quality in your presentations to the point where you go, where did this come from? This isn't what I had last year's presentation. Well, it's because there are instances where you can actually inadvertently do that. I got another one. This is my personal tip, and it kind of goes along with that watermarking from photo sites. I don't like the watermarking from photo sites, one, because they ruin the picture. You can't really use it with that on there. But the real reason is those watermarks are pretty subtle. They can get skipped in that review process, as we were talking about earlier. I like to put a big, huge FPO, for placement only, traditional graphic design terminology, but we put it across there so that everybody knows it's there in a printout or in a review cycle. You know you've got to replace it. You can't skip it when you get down to that last minute crunch. Or we put a big green box that says FPO or update image, just some sort of reminder to not let that be skipped. And I think that's a huge thing I see in a lot of presentations, you know, presenter presentations that come to me and, you know, we're getting them ready for a show. Like, hey, did you know this image here is watermarked? It is. I used that in the last presentation too. Like, oh yeah, I forgot to get that one, whatever. So
There was or is a great placement agency in New York City for designers and creatives, and the name of the company was For Placement Only.
Oh, that's awesome.
I thought it was a brilliant name.
That would be, you could have fun marketing that.
Yeah. Any other technical issues or tips?
So, Nolan, here's one, because you work in Keynote quite a bit.
Haven't in a while. So, I've actually moved away
from I have a problem with PowerPoint having compress images on by default. Now the compression level has gotten much higher, so they're, you know, that's basically at a high definition level, but it's still compressing. That's one of my first things to do, is to turn that feature off so that I'm not worried about it. I want to put in what I want to do. Keynote doesn't have as good a tools for compressing things, and it also doesn't have I'm a big fan of NX PowerLite, which is going to be my tech tip later. So there, I've just given it away. But I'm a big fan of optimizing an image for its use. If you know you're going to be projecting at 1920 by 1080, you don't need a 4,000 pixel image in there, or you don't need a TIFF image that's 90 megabytes. And the reason I bring that up is I just worked on a slide. One slide was 90 megabytes. Like, how can one slide be 90 megabytes? When you break it open, you look into it, it was all TIFF images. So when we optimized those down, and they were huge, they were print quality, obviously, and they weren't, you know, it was a collage of little images, a little grid pattern, optimized it down 2.2 megabytes. So just from a server space and from a handoff and from ease of use, quality, not a single difference, because it's actually now at the pixel count you needed. That's just a big thing of mine for using images, is that you can artificially inflate a file size beyond functionality. Did the same thing with a Keynote presentation recently. It went from 1.3 gigabytes to 260 megabytes. And the only reason it was still at 260, there was like around a 90 megabyte video clip in there, which actually I thought was a little bit small. But it's just, oversized files are not necessarily helping anybody.
No. And some clients get very just persnickety over it to varying degrees. Yeah. All right. So I think we've covered lots about imagery. There's still lots more to cover, probably more on the technical side, but maybe we'll get to that in the future.
Absolutely. If you didn't catch it, Sandy had to drop off. She'll be back with us. So we will, we're going to do our wrap-up segments. Imagery in the form of photos, icons, illustrations, they're a major component in presentation design. And there's an amazing amount of images resources available for literally every designer or anyone working on presentations, which has changed the design process quite a bit. Thanks for listening to our thoughts on images in presentations, and being someone that listens to the presentation podcast, can we ask that you just take that 2 to 3 minutes out of your day to open iTunes and rate the podcast? It's one of the very few metrics that we have to know that we are doing something worth our time and focus, and it's being enjoyed. So thank you for doing that. Really appreciate it.
All right, so let's talk presentation pro tips. What do you got this week, Troy?
You know, because we're talking about images. Images get dropped in as you know, a JPEG. They get dropped in as a rectangle, and that's kind of the standard way you see it. And I'm not really a big fan of looking like, you know, I've got a here's my content, here's my text, and here's a rectangle with a photo. So I like to customize them in Photoshop or using PowerPoint more and more. And this is kind of a cool tip. In using PowerPoint, you may not know it, but if you can take any PowerPoint shape that's a rectangle and change it to any other shape, so you can change a photo to a circle, you could change it to a heart, you can change it to the rounded rectangle. So any of those are available. Now, the thing is, if you change it to a circle, so you go to image and change shape, and it's really, really easy to do, but it's also a little frustrating at the same time, because if you change it to a circle, it may not be a perfect circle because you had a large, you're going to have an oval. But you can go into the crop tool, change the circle to actually be a circle, and then you can reposition the image within the visible area to be what you want. But it's a great tip. It's a great way to do it. If you use SmartArt, you see it all the time, especially like the circle. They do the circle photo indicators. All that is an inserted image, shape changed to a circle, and you know, positioned, which you may have to reposition later. So there's my presentation tip for today.
That's great. I have a photo tip as well. A lot of times people go to stock houses for abstract backgrounds. Sometimes it's really nice to have this, you know, abstract colored, you know, wavy background for a slide, but you can actually create your own fairly easily. You can take almost any image and apply a blur to it in Photoshop. I'm sorry, in PowerPoint. You don't need Photoshop, and you have control over how much it blurs. So take any image and set the blur really high, you know, maybe all the way up to 100. There's that slider for it. And you'll see you magically get a really cool abstract background that you can put stuff over. And sometimes what's really nice to do is to use like a full page image. Let's say it's of a sunset as your title page. And so you have your title on it, whatever. And then the next page and every subsequent page, you take that image and blur it. So now it's just an abstract background that doesn't compete with content, but it also has the same color scheme and feel as the title slide. And it's a way of bringing your whole presentation together. So I blur photos all the time. There are lots of techniques you can use for it, but that using that, I once blurred a photo of Meg Whitman. She was on a slide. We were talking about her, and then in subsequent slides, I like the colors in the photo, so we just blurred her face like completely, like up to 100, and you couldn't even tell it was a person, but you saw the same colors that we had seen previously.
Oh, that's awesome! That's a great presentation tip. Yep. You know, I got to throw one more in there because I mentioned it earlier because we're talking all about photos. NX PowerLight is my preferred third-party solution for optimizing images directly in PowerPoint. I think they do a really, really good job, but I do recommend you look into the custom settings and you actually set it to 1920 by 1080 to make sure you're maintaining HD quality images on your 16 by 9 presentations. And it does go way up. I mean, we're working on a three-screen, you know, PowerPoint setup as an ultra wide, and you can use NX PowerLight. It actually has 5760 by 1080. I'm guessing at my pixel count there, but you can actually use the custom settings and make sure you're staying within boundaries of what you need. And it does a great job of making sure those file sizes stay where you want them. Hey, this is Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, a design studio team focused on presentation design that includes amazing visual images. If you are looking for presentation design, messaging, and design, check us out at www.tlccreative.com and my blog, thepowerpointblog.com.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz. You can visit my website at presentationwiz.biz and my blog at pptwizblog, or just search for Sandra Johnson with PowerPoint in your web browser, and you'll learn all kinds of things about me.
This is Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com, where you can subscribe for lots of free downloads and goodies. And if you're interested in on-site presentation or data visualization training, drop me a line at Nolan Hames Creative.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.